Hello and welcome, dear viewers, to Weekly Scope. You're watching us on Sahar TV, and I'm your host, Farah Hatwi. And we're joined here in the studio by Mr. Manuel Oxen, writer, editor-in-chief of Tourist News Magazine. Hello and welcome, Mr. Manuel.
Hello.
We will watch a report that would summarize headlines written by some important newspapers along the region. Of course, we picked up the most important ones. Dear viewers, we will take a look and be right back. Stay with us. Starting with Tehran Times, it is obvious Iran should participate in Syria talks. The writer highlighted that all countries that influence the situation in Syria, including Iran, should participate in the upcoming peace conference in Switzerland. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told RT in an interview published on Tuesday. Moving on to another article from Tehran Times, Iran should enrich to 60% to fuel ships if nuclear talks fail, MPs propose. A group of Iranian MPs has prepared a draft bill that would oblige the government to enrich uranium up to a purity of 60% if negotiations with the major powers over Tehran's nuclear program fail, a report says. Iran strongly condemns deadly terrorist attack in Egypt. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Marzeh Afkham has strongly condemned the recent terrorist attack in Egypt and expressed condolences to the bereaved families and the wounded. She advised the Egyptian nation and leaders to maintain their national unity and take measures to prevent the Israeli regime from sowing discord among the people. Yemen promises some autonomy to southern secessionists. Yemeni political parties have signed a document pledging a just solution that would grant some autonomy to the south in the face of secessionist demands, state news agency Saba reported. Moving on to Middle East Online with this headline, 14 killed in bomb attack on Egypt Police HQ. Egypt's premier on Tuesday declared the Muslim Brotherhood movement a terrorist group after a car bomb ripped through a police building and killed at least 14 people. Diplomacy fails as South Sudan slides towards civil war. South Sudan's army was poised for a major offensive against rebel forces, the president said Monday, as the country slid towards civil war despite international peace efforts. Kuwaiti government resigns ahead of imminent cabinet reshuffle. All ministers of the Kuwaiti government submitted on Monday their resignations to the prime minister, the country's parliament speaker said after media reports of an imminent cabinet reshuffle. Moving on to Lebanese Al-Akhbar, Syrian patriarch Takfiri's target all Syrians. Saudi judge wants activists tried for apostasy. A Saudi judge has recommended that a liberal activist be tried in a higher court for apostasy, a charge that could carry the death penalty, rights campaigners said Thursday. More from Al-Akhbar, broadcast cut after Turkish minister calls on PM to resign. Turkey's environment minister stepped down on Wednesday over a corruption probe, with his live broadcast being cut after calling on the prime minister to follow suit. More from Al-Akhbar, Russia Arafat died of natural causes. Former Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat died of natural causes, not radiation poisoning, the head of a Russian state forensics agency that tested samples taken from his body said on Thursday, according to the Interfax news agency. Moving on to Al-Bawaba with this headline, Erdogan ruling Turkey through shadowy power structure, says opposition. Libyan protesters take to Tripoli streets calling for PM resignation. More from Al-Bawaba, Israeli forces demolish Bedouin village for the 63rd time. Moving on to Turkish Today's Zaman, PM threatens business, media and civic groups amid corruption woes. Finally, Britain hit by floods and power cuts, stranded residents evacuated.
Okay, Mr. Manuel, these were headlines dominated by newspapers along the region. And as for the articles picked up, whether from the opinion or the editorials, a lot of writers actually wanted to say goodbye to 2013 by assessing what happened throughout the year. Here I've got from the Counterpunch an article for writer Ramzi Baroud under the headline 2013 Assessing the Conflict in Syria and Egypt. He started his article by saying 2013 has expectedly been a terrible year for several Arab nations. It has been terrible because the promise of greater freedoms and political reforms has been reversed, most violently in some instances by taking a few countries down the path of anarchy and complete chaos. Syria and Egypt are two cases in point. Do you agree with the writer here? Has 2013 been a devastating year, as explained by the writer, for both Syria and Egypt?
I think you can just be disappointed by a year when you had big expectations in that. And to be honest, in my opinion, it's a little bit, or it was a little bit naive to expect in the end of 2012 the big positive change in Syria as well as in Egypt. It went worse and worse and worse. And you don't have to be a very well-gifted predictor when you say now it will be worse in the year 2014 as well. As long,
so you're still pessimistic, let me say.
I'm realistic.
Yes, a realistic. Here, of course, when looking at the conditions that actually led to that conclusion, is it because of the expectations, as you highlighted, that people had towards the success of revolutions, whether in Syria or even in Syria, if you wanted to speak about it specifically? It's a different revolution than what's taking place in Egypt. But here, is it due to what conditions, in your opinion? Because people were expecting that these revolutions or even these uprisings would actually give them some positive results, at least when it comes to their own living conditions, and then that wasn't the result?
I'm convinced that the big expectations in revolution and in liberal values and social values and so on were, didn't come from the people in Syria or Egypt, but came from the political commenters in the West. I think they were the ones who were putting those hopes or those expectations in this. You can ask anybody in Syria and they will tell you, no, from the beginning we knew what, how this might end or how this, this will end. So we have to, when we analyze the media coverage of those conflicts and the expectations, we should see the difference between the expectations of the West and that what happened in reality, and that what the people in the region it themselves expected.
Here the writer actually is speaking about two countries together, Syria and Egypt. In your opinion, are they two different cases here that we're looking at? I mean, it's not the same uprising, it's not the same expectations, and it's not the same even difficulties that has been passing through. What's happened in Egypt? Can we compare it to what's happening in Syria and ongoing up till now?
No, I don't think so. I think that there are many, many differences. But there are things, and I come back to the media coverage and to the so-called analyses we heard in the West about both countries, which are the same. I just want to remind that in 2011, when the media coverage of the so-called Arabic Spring was really, really strong, we had the impression in Europe and in the US that now the generation Facebook is going on the streets, they are demonstrating for stuff like free internet, gay marriage, liberal values.
Because that's what the media wanted to actually convey.
And Western politics, of course, this is how they wanted to show us that conflict. And everybody who was warning in Europe, who was saying...
It was pro-revolution.
Yes, it was completely pro-revolution, but it was not that that revolution which mm-hmm. took place in reality. So everybody who was warning, for example, in Egypt, who was saying the Muslim Brotherhood with a strong Saudi support will gain power and they will reverse, the situation will be in Egypt even worse than it was before under Mubarak. Those people who were warning were attacked as they were people who see everything in a black way, in a negative way. Mm-hmm. They were called insane and so on. But now it turns out they were right.
And this, of course, reminds me of how the European and especially the Western newspapers and magazine actually were conducting and speaking about the ongoing crisis in Syria at the beginning of the crisis, and then later on, after a year or a year and a half, they started tackling the issue from a different perspective. Here, can we say that the Western media now is totally convinced, as when it comes to Syria, that the situation now it's not as it was conveyed at the beginning. It's not an opposition calling for an uprising. It's not a bunch of people who wants the right, but it's about fighters, terrorists who are funded by foreign countries. In order to like have a mission inside Syria for political interests of these countries. Have the Western media come to that conclusion, in your opinion? Of course, as long as you're coming from that, from European magazine and editor-in-chief of that, have you seen the change in instances?
There is a change, of course. You can see this, and this change came several months ago. You can say it came at that moment when the inner ministries in Europe got information about that so many European jihadis are joining Wahhabi or Takfiri groups in Syria.
That's when they shed the light on
them. So all of a sudden it played a role. But what still, it's a little bit ridiculous, this media coverage, because at the same time, the same newspapers, the same TV stations, they still report about the so-called popular uprising in Syria, which simply doesn't exist.
Yes, so it's kind of a contradiction here.
They say they have now their own plot. They say there was this popular liberal revolution, which was taken by the Saudi, by the jihadis. But there was this uprising, and it was the jihadis were just able to conquer this movement because the West didn't support enough the liberal revolution. Mm-hmm. This is the plot we get to read. Mm-hmm. So we are still very, very far away from the truth.
Yes.
But of course, you cannot deny anymore when people come back from Syria and they killed their people, they were terrorists in terrorist groups active. You cannot deny anymore that there is something going on which has nothing to do with a democratic uprising.
And at the same time, these newspapers, especially writers, they are speaking that there are terrorist groups inside Syria fighting on Syrian land and Syrian territories. They go on to support the massive funding of US by the US and even by Saudi Arabia and Persian Gulf countries to these fighters.
Absolutely.
So that's a contradiction also here that is found.
Yes, but they deliver this message in a way that it sounds logic. They say we have to support the so-called Free Syrian Army, the so-called moderate rebel fighters, so that they can be stronger than the evil jihadi fighters. This is the plot we hear, we see, we read every day almost.
Was 2013 that pessimistic, as in when it comes to actually analyzing how the Syrian government stood still in facing these terrorists, and unlike, of course, what happened in different countries, where in Libya the Western intervention happened throughout 2000, of course, we've seen that 2013, we've seen the repercussions of that. Can we say today that the U.S., the Syrian government stood still in front of this message that Saudis wanted to see inside Syria, or even the interest that they wanted to see, and that by itself is a success at one point in 2013 for the Syrian government, of course, despite all the casualties here?
Yes, of course.
For
the Syrian government, it is a success, and it is a success that they managed, although during that hard time in the beginning of September after the Ghouta chemical attack, where I think almost everybody expected maybe a world war. We didn't know. We saw these pictures of Russian boats, of US-American boats, of British boats. So everybody, we saw the pictures from Damascus, young people standing on the mountain and saying, we stand with Syria. So I think the situation was as critical as maybe the Cuba crisis or so. So it was also, this is one point why the year 2013 was not really as good as many expected or hoped. But anyway, it didn't come to this military strike. Mm-hmm. And of course, for the Syrian government, it was a sort of stabilization.
Yes.
I mean, we have also to see that I think within the last 2 years, the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, had a lot of opportunities simply to leave his office in a very luxury way. I think he could have went to Russia, to wherever. I think that there were a lot of opportunities for mm-hmm. him, and he didn't do that. He always gave the message, this is my job, this is my office, and I will do this, especially now in this heart, in this crisis, I have to do this.
Here, of course, the writer said that Syria has been hit the hardest. For months, the United Nations has maintained that over 100,000 people have been killed in 33 months of conflict. The UN's humanitarian agency, OCHA, says that millions of Syrians living in perpetual suffering are in need of aid. And this number will reach to 9.3 million by the end of a million by the end of next year.
Yeah.
So we're also talking about more catastrophic results in 2014. Do you think that that would continue here?
Absolutely, but when we talk about those statistics, we shouldn't just tell the numbers. We should also say what is behind those numbers. So one important point, from those casualties we speak always about, the West speaks about these more than 100,000 casualties as these are all civilians killed by the Syrian army.
Yes.
The reality is that tens of thousands of Syrian soldiers and security...
But no one mentions anything about
that. Nobody talks about these people. Mm-hmm. That people, just because they work in a public office, you know, in Syria they have state bakeries, so when you work in that bakery, you work for the state, you are killed by the jihadis because you are a regime profiteer in their eyes. So this is not told. The other point when it comes to the refugees is the biggest refugee movement in Syria is inside the country, not to outside. Right now they move inside the country. Mm-hmm. So let us take a look.
Unstable homes and unstable lands.
From where to where do these people flee? They flee from so-called liberated areas where the rebels liberate an area. People flee into government-controlled areas and not the other direction. So without, I don't want to sound cynic right now, but if the West really, in an honest way, has an interest in helping people, the West should immediately stop any support for the rebels. The West should make a tremendous pressure on Turkey to close the borders and really, really also to make pressure on Saudi Arabia to cut down any support. If they want to help people, it would be very easy. As long as the West doesn't do that,
many,
it will go on.
Actually, many analyses along the region highlighted that this new Iranian-Syrian diplomacy could help in the Syrian situation, at least by, as you said, stopping the funding of these terrorist groups and assaults by practicing some kind of pressure on Turkey to close the borders. Of course, stop the funding and stop all the weapons that are entering through these borders. But of course, here, obviously, U.S. did not take that decision, as if this kind of optimistic view about this new diplomacy used between Iran and U.S. did not give the results expected here. How do you read that?
No, and I think it will take a long time. The West is in a deep, deep problem. The West is in a political, logical crisis, especially when it comes to Syria. From the beginning, from March 2011, Western politicians gave a very clear message that Bashar al-Assad is the slaughter of Damascus.
Yes.
So they gave so many hard messages that they cannot now simply step back and say, oh, he is not as worse as we said before. Mm-hmm. So the West trapped itself in a rhetorical and in a political way. Mm-hmm. And of course, any in the logic of the West, any country which helps the rebels, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. This means Turkey and Saudi Arabia. They know, of course, Turkey and Saudi Arabia know who they support there.
Definitely.
But they know that they are somewhere in a space which is free of critics of the West. They can do what they want.
Definitely, they have a wider gap to actually practice these acts. Syrians involved in this war understand well that a prolonged conflict could mean that the country faces the risk of complete breakdown, and that a Somalia or an Afghanistan scenario is in the offing. Then few would even care to remember the original reasons of why the war started in the first place, as several generations of Syrian refugees would be doomed to live the same fate as the unending Palestinian refugee experience. So that's how we're looking now at Syria, a similar Afghani area, a similar Somali area, and also a Palestinian case, similar to a Palestinian case.
Well, in Damascus, they call the city Araqqa, which was conquered by the Islamist fighters of the Nusra Front. They call it Little Kandahar.
Yes.
And they don't do this just as a joke. They do that because...
because they can't acquire.
Because it, It turned exactly, mm-hmm. and because the Taliban were appearing there and doing this. Mm-hmm. And yes, of course, we see now, already now, we see Syria, we have government-controlled areas, mm-hmm. which are relatively safe.
Yes.
We have their bombing and all these things, and we have chaotic areas governed by the so-called rebels. Mm-hmm. And when we look to those areas, we see the rebel forces fighting each other. It is all about money, it is all about robbery. Mm-hmm. We see a chaotic, right free area in that country already, and this might become worse when the West and when the Gulf states and Turkey don't stop the support.
Okay, moving on to Middle East Online, an article picked up from there, how Saudi Arabia turned into number one enemy of Damascus by Rida Mabardi from Damascus. They said that Syria now views Saudi Arabia as its number one enemy and accuses it of trying to destroy the country by arming jihadists and other rebels fighting to oust President Bashar al-Assad. The oil-rich Gulf monarchies have sided with the opposition from the start of Syria's conflict in March 2011, with Riyadh leading calls for the fall of Assad. The writer went on to say, Syrian Deputy Foreign Minister Faisal Mogdad said that this week that Saudi Arabia was providing unfettered support for terrorist groups in Syria, while other nations had reviewed their positions. Of course, we will speak about the other countries who reviewed their position towards Syria and why. But before that, I wanted to know, you visited Syria lately. Yeah. Have you seen that kind of feeling among Syrians, speaking about the writer, what highlighted this hatred towards Saudi Arabia and this blame, as if they're putting everything that happened inside Syria on Saudi Arabia? Have you touched that, and have you seen that among Syrian locals?
Yes, of course. I was last week I was in the press conference from the director of the new Syrian movie King of the Sands, which shows in a very, let me say, in a hardcore mean way the history of the Al Saud family which governed Saudi Arabia. And yes, there is
hatred, this kind of hatred.
I don't know if I would call it hatred, but it's a strong antipathy against Saudi Arabia. But I can, of course, we can understand this when, I mean, for the Syrians, I think it's not so much Saudi Arabia itself. It is they wonder how Saudi Arabia manages to get on the global stage with the Western states as a supporter of a democratic
exactly.
opposition in
they
Syria.
Exactly, they can't understand that.
As an absolutarian monarchy.
While they're not practicing the same issue, the same democracy on their own territories.
Like Qatar or any other Gulf state which supports those movements on the one side, but on the other side they are Stone Age absolutarian monarchies.
Yes, and even they always criticize the fact that women are not even able to drive as a sample of more undemocratic societies and even monarchies.
But we had this when we go back to the media coverage in the West. We have this since years or since decades when we compare Iran with Saudi Arabia. If you read in the newspapers, you read a lot of bad things about Iran. You read a lot of lies, what happens there since the Islamic Revolution. On the other side, Saudi Arabia is almost in the critic-free space because it's an ally of the West.
Exactly.
So these lies we see already in the Iranian-Saudi conflict. We see now also when it comes to Syria. I mean, just one example, a ridiculous a feminist NGO noted last month that Syria is one of the worst countries for women, and Syria was at a less position than Saudi Arabia. So you see that propaganda, also how it works with those lies.
And of course we spoke, Manuel, you and I, about how offensive the governments, the European governments, can be towards journalists who are even writing, saying the truth at one point or another, how they're being harassed and they're being targeted by the European governments. Manuel Oxen, writer, editor-in-chief of Zurist, a news magazine located in Berlin. Yeah. Of course, wish you the best on what you're doing, and of course, continue saying the truth about what's happening in the Middle East, especially inside Syria. Thank you for speaking on the behalf of those who cannot make their voices reach, at least to the Western societies. Thank you for being with us in Lebanon.
Thank you.
Dear viewers, that's all the time that we have. Thank you for watching.